Okay, so we're learning this morning Le'ili Nishmas Harav Mordechai Schlesinger, Adam Kashuv Moed in Tel Aviv. And guess what we're learning today? You'll never guess. We're learning Perek Lamed Gimel, the 33rd chapter of the Gvuras Hashem on the 33rd day of the Omer, on Lag VaOmer. Okay, today is Lag BeGvuras. So where are we up to here in Perek Lamed Gimel? Is we are in the midst of the Maharal's first pass at the Makos. Remember that the section of the Gvuras Hashem, which we're in, which has been for some time, is a systematic and sequential analysis of the story of Sefer Shmos, so the story of the Golus Ugulas Mitzrayim, you know, around the Psukim. Maral doesn't hit everything, but he hits a lot of things. And where he's up to right now here is in the middle of the Makos. We started talking about the Makos pretty much in the last perek, and it continues significantly through much of the next perek, which deals with the end of the Makos and Makos Bechoros. Today, Perek Lamed Gimel deals with a bunch of things. In other words, in the Makos, as we said, there are these things, you know, which stick out by this maka, by that maka, by a few of them, by a couple of them. So the morale here, this perek, and again, as we find with a lot of the prakim in this running commentary of the Gvuras Hashem, it's not one overall theme. He's touching on a number of specific things, and I think just we'll look at each one a little bit, and it's little pieces of Vimir learned, you know, how you learn, how you see something in the Pasuk, how you see how Chazal speak about something. So the first paragraph in Perek Lamed Gimel, he speaks about the fascinating description which the Pasuk brings of the second Makkah. I last, in the Perek Lamed Beis, besides speaking about other things, he spoke a little bit about Makas Dam and Elohehem and so on and so forth. We talked about attacking the source, what the Mitzvim viewed as their source of life and strength, which was the river. The second Makkah is the Makkah of Tzfardea, the plague of frogs. And there's an interesting description, because it starts off and it says, I will plague his entire gvul, his entire boundary with frogs. The river will bring forth frogs. Right, and frogs in your head, and instead of frogs in his bed, and so on and so forth. And then, after the warnings about all the frogs, 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 Hashem says to Moshe, tell Aaron, extend his hand with the stick on the rivers, v'halas ha-tzfardim, and bring up the frogs. And Aaron extends his hands, and then says, v'tal ha-tzfardeya. And the frog arose, and it covered Eretz Mitzrayim. So what's going on? The frogs or the frog? So it's a gute frager. It's a good question. And the simple pshat, of course, in the pasuk is that the plague of frogs came up. But it's so striking how it changes from all the rest. So Rashi quotes two opinions in the Medrash. Rashi quotes one opinion in the Medrash. He brings pshuta. He brings that the simple pshat is that shirus hatzvaridim kairei lashon yechidus, that the spread of the frogs, it calls the tzvardeya, right? It calls it by a singular language, and he brings a proof to that as well. However, he brings tzvardeya achas haisa. There was one big frog which came out of the river. The hayu makin haisa, and they made the Egyptians nervous, and they went and they were beating it with a stick. And the chasher yanu oisai kenyirba the chenyifrets, you know, as they beat the frog, more frogs kept popping out of this from its nostrils, from its from wherever, and that's what made the frog spread over the land of Mitzrayim. That's what Rashi brings in his explanation of Batal Hatzvardeya. That's part of the Medrash. Rabbi Eliezer in the Medrash, that's Rabbi Akiva's opinion in the Medrash, Rabbi Eliezer says to Rabbi Akiva, fascinating, Malacha Eitzel Agadais, Klach Eitzel Negoim Ve'olois. Why are you involving yourself in Midrashic things? Go to study the real halachic, the hardcore halachas. And he said, Tzardeya achas haisa v'sharka lahem uvol kulam. There was one frog that whistled and brought the rest of them. What's this medrash? What's the idea? What's the argument between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Lazar? So the Maral says that that it's not simply, some picture of this huge frog, but it was what this is a reference to is the koyach hamoilid umashritz hatzvardim. That's what it says on Vatal Hatzvardeya, that there was a tremendous prolific production of frogs here. The Tzvardeya was this prolific reproduction of frogs. That's what it is. The power of the frog rather than a frog. So in other words, and this is very typical of the Maharal, that it's not speaking necessarily of one big frog that comes out of the river and they all go and beat it and pound it, but what we're dealing with here is that there was a koyach hamoilid. There was this, suddenly frogs were being developed and growing and jumping and spreading all over the place. Rabbi Eliezer says no. Rabbi Eliezer says that this was not a koyach that generated tzvardim that we're dealing with over here, but rather it was a koyach ha-ma'asef. There are tons of frogs. You don't need to produce lots of frogs. There are tons of frogs. Except where are the frogs? The frogs are in marshes, they're in water. You don't see frogs coming up over Eretz Mitzrayim. So the koyach which happened over here wasn't a power which produced frogs, but it was a power which gathered the frogs. Like the frog, so to speak, whistling. Vatala tzvardeya, so the way Rabbi Eliezer describes it is that, again in the language is, tzvardeya achas haisa v'sharka lahem uvo kulam. There was one frog, and it whistled, and all the rest of them came. So it was, in his mind, is vatala tzvardeya was that there became a trend, right? One left, and followed by others, and others, and others, and others, and they all ended up coming onto the dry land and filling the land of Mitzrayim. So this is the way the Maral seems to read the Medrash, with less of a focus on the literal thing. Was this one whistling, or were they beating up this one? And was giving off nechiles, but that there was a question as to whether there was a greater production of frogs, or whether it was just bringing the frogs which were there. And that's always, something of an issue when we're trying to define precisely the way the Makkah worked. Like, for example, by Orev, they didn't create wild animals with Orev. It's just that the Orev was that the animals from all over the place came into Eretz Mitzrayim. It's not necessarily a new creation. It's much more of bringing all of these things into one place where they usually are not to be found. So that's the way he discusses that first thing, that first notion which is there in the Jewish. He does not explain why Rabbi Eliezer is so dismissive of what Rabbi Akiva says, and he says, why are you bothering with Agadais? Why didn't you go to learn Halacha? Why didn't you go to learn Negoim V'Olais? What was so objectionable to him about Rabbi Akiva's statement? And one could only surmise that the goal of Rabbi Eliezer was to really, in a certain sense, make it a little bit more within the box of nature. Right? When you say that they all came, as opposed to they were all created, it's a little bit more natural. In a certain, neither is natural. Neither is purely natural. One is adding to creation, and one is just bringing. And maybe he was uncomfortable with this liberty which Rabbi Akiva was taking. That's piece number one, which the Maral discusses here, a detail when it comes to the Tzvardeya. Piece number two. When the Makkah of Tzvardeya comes, it seems to have struck a chord. even though the Egyptian sorcerers were also able to produce Tzvardeya, but the Tzvardeya did get on Paro's nerves. And it says here, Paro called Moshe and Aaron, and he said, please daven to Hashem, so that he can get rid of the frogs from me and from my nation, and I'll send the people, and they will bring offerings to Hashem. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to Paro, okay, make my day, tell me when you want me to daven to you, to Hashem, about this, and I will do so. And we'll get rid of the Tzvardim, and they will only stay in the river. And that was it. So last week we talked a little bit about this idea that he could tell him, I'll do it any time, and that would show the tremendous power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because usually everything has, Kol Zman Vayis, everything is constrained within when it's able to function, able to do its thing. Here it would show extra power. And the Maharal explained, if you remember last week, that's why it said, Koyamar Hashem, instead of Hashem Elokei HaIvrim, like it says by most of the other Makos, because this would be a tremendous demonstration of the overriding power of Hashem. However, what the Maharal deals with here is a very interesting question. And that is, what was going on over here with Paro, that Paro was getting nervous and was praying, asking Moshe Rabbeinu to pray to get rid of the Tzvardeya? Don't we know, as a rule, that the Makos lasted for 7 days? That's sort of like a given, right? Indications in certain Makos in the Psukim. But the Makos were there for 7 days. And so, what's going on over here? There are two ways to see it. And the Maharal is going to pursue both ways. One way is that Paro couldn't even take 7 days. And the other way is that somehow after the 7 days, the Mako was continuing and Paro needed to ask Moshe Rabbeinu to stop it. But what's going on? Do the Makos last 7 days? And not more? And not less? Like, how do we process this request of Paro to end the Makos, which Moshe Rabbeinu went ahead and did based on Paro's request? How do we fit it in to the normal pattern, which again we already saw in the Makos of Dam, Vayimol Yishivas Yomim Achrei Hakos Hashem Esayor, was a week of the Makos of Dam. So then, like, what's how do we fit this in? So the Maharal explains as follows. He says there's two ways of a Makos. There's the development of the Makos, and then there's the remnant of the Makos. Very simple logic, which he says. The development of the Makos is when water is turned into blood. But once the water is blood, how does the water turn back? How does the blood turn back into water? When we say that the Makos was 7 days, does that mean that after 7 days, presto changeo, the blood turned back into water? Says, well, no, that's not what it means. The Yo'er, the river of Mitzrayim, was drawing from wherever it drew, from underground fountains, which were blood and turning into blood and turning into blood. Over time, if it stops turning into blood, new water will flow in, and slowly but surely the blood will go on its way, and the river will turn back into water. Says, well, that's the way it worked. For 7 days, the water was turning into blood. After 7 days, the water was no longer turning into blood. And therefore, as the normal cycle of such a river would have it, the water came, and slowly, quickly, however it happened, the blood left and was replaced by water after the 7 days. Great. When it comes to the plague of the frogs, what happens? For 7 days, frogs are jumping into Mitzrayim. Whether, according to Rabbi Akiva, they are developing, right? Frogs are coming out, and the koyach hamashritz, the power to produce more and more frogs. Or according to Rabbi Eliezer, frogs are descending on Mitzrayim from all corners of the earth. And Mitzrayim is getting filled and filled and filled with frogs. After 7 days, no more frogs came. However, what about the frogs that are there? Right, when it comes to blood in the water, so that blood would gradually be replaced because new water flows. It's a pipeline. And therefore, new water flows in and the blood goes away, and therefore, not at the end of the 7 days did they suddenly have the water instead of the blood, but it started to flush out the system at the end of the 7 days, and eventually everything was okay. But what would happen with regard to Mitzrayim? So the thing is, that is, says the Maral, what Paro had to daven for. What Paro had to daven for here was that, or had to ask Moshe Rabbeinu to daven for, was that he should get rid of the effects of the Tzfardea, that the frogs should be gone, that the frogs should be taken away. This is the way he learns. So again, the plague did last for 7 days here, just like all the other plagues lasted for 7 days. However, the issue was that he wanted to get rid of the after effects of the frogs after the 7 days, because that was still driving him crazy. And so that was what the tefillah was for. That's the way the Maral explains it and understands it. It's an interesting thing. It's an interesting pshat, because it says here, "Vayas Hashem kidvar Moshe vayamusu hatzvardim." When Moshe davened, the tzvardim died. Min habatim, min hachatzeres, min hasodes. And Rashi points out later by Makas Orev that when Moshe Rabbeinu davened by Orev, because there also Paro was getting all nervous, and Hashem davened vayosar ha'orev, and the Orev was removed. So Rashi explains that to leave the dead animals there wouldn't be such a good thing. Why? Because they would say, oh wow, we get leopard skins, we get lion skins. There was something to benefit from the dead animals. But the dead frogs, there was nothing to benefit from. So therefore, when you have to say what the Maral means when he says this, is that the frogs were still alive and croaking. Right, and therefore he was worried about that. So Moshe Rabbeinu davened that they should die. Once they were dead, and they weren't jumping around all over the place, so then it was just a matter of cleanup, which was left to Paro. But that's the first way that the Maral learns. And the Maral says that this is consistent with all of the makos where Moshe Rabbeinu had to daven in order to be able to get rid of them. Where else do we find that Moshe Rabbeinu davened to get rid of it? So he says by the Orev, it was after 7 days, no more wild animals were coming, but the animals which were there, they were there. Right? That's a remnant of the plague, so he had to daven to get rid of them. Another place where we find that he had to daven was when it came to the Arbe, right? The Makkah of Arbe at the beginning of Parshas Bay. There also, Moshe and Aaron were made to daven, and Hatir Hashem Yosser El Rakas Hamavet Hazeh. And again, the idea was that the Arbe, which was already there, was still driving them crazy, and therefore he had to get rid of them. And when it came to Bored, that's a little bit trickier. There he asked them to stop. Now Bored is a hailstorm, so isn't it only a problem when it's falling? So the Maral says that he takes a chazal and he makes it pshat. Chazal, it's really a pasuk, right? The pasuk says, Moshe Rabbeinu raised up his hands, the thunder stopped, the Bored will no longer be, it says, and in fact, that's what he did. And the Kailas and the Borad did not come down to the ground. So in other words, the way the Maral is saying it in this pshat, the hail was already created. It was in the clouds, it was falling from the clouds, and therefore, even though the 7 days were over, there was still after effects of what was created during the 7 days that was coming. Moshe Rabbeinu davened to Hashem, and it stopped. It stopped in midstream. What was in the clouds disappeared. What was falling from the heavens didn't make it down to the ground. That was what Moshe Rabbeinu stopped. I find that to be the most difficult one of them. And the reason is simply because you understand that if you have 7 days of frogs that fill Mitzrayim, then, oh my gosh, right? How do you get rid of these frogs? How do you get rid of these wild animals? How do you get rid of these locusts? But if you have hail falling for 7 days, and then there's a little, you know, there's a few more hails, you know, which are in the sky, and maybe another, you know, another hour's worth or a couple of hours worth in the clouds, you know, so wait a couple of hours. You know, it's not such, it's not like, what are we going to do? How are we ever going to recover from this thing? So instead of 7 days, it's 7.5 days. It's 8 days. You know, the Tzfardea was, instead of 7 days, was endless. The Arba was endless, because if you don't get rid of them, like, who knows what's going to be? So it's a little bit more difficult to put it in over there, but this is approach number one of the Maral, that indeed the Makos all lasted 7 days. No tefillah did anything to stop the Makos from lasting for 7 days, but 7 days was the infusion, the creation of the Makkah, and then there were still after effects, and you know, remnants of the Makkah, and that was what Moshe Rabbeinu prayed to get rid of. Yeah.
The Pashup
Pshat in all of them is that the Makkah ended early.
Uh-huh.
And that's the second Pshat of the, that's the second Pshat of the, I think it's the Pashup Pshat, but I don't know.
That's
but the second Pshat of the Maral is that that the Makkah had done its job. A Makkah default was 7 days. If Paro didn't say uncle and pray to Moshe Rabbeinu, okay, I got the message, end it, the Makkah lasted for a full 7 days, like in the case of Dam. But in the Makkos like Tzfardea and so on and so forth, when Paro said, please, daven to Hashem that he should stop it, so then he stopped it, and he stopped it in the middle of the 7 days. Kfar Nishlamo HaMakkah. At that point, the Makkah was complete, and there was no need to bring it anymore. He did not say that the Makkah was 7 days unless he had not submitted and he was not ready to send off the Jewish people. Yes, I'm sorry. What did you want to ask?
Shechin and Kinim would also seem to be like in Ra'al's first chat. I mean, where did the Kinim were all there? Where did they go? And then the Shechin also. I mean, they were afflicted by Shechin. So the Shechin is, you know, like, I don't know, that doesn't seem like it's going to go away so fast unless it just.
That, so, but whatever, it wasn't enough, it seems, you know, in each one, you have to see what made Paro give in, or what made Paro not give in, what drove him crazy after the fact, what didn't drive him crazy after the fact, you know, in Achanami, there are other Makos with after effects that we don't find the same invoking of the prayer. Okay, I think the second shot has a lot of pshuta going for it. And finally, he says something here. Says something here, which is a chiddush, I think. He says that, you know, he said to Paro, "When do you want me to daven for you to get rid of them?" And it was going to be dafka lemochar v'loy hayoyim, dafka for the next day, and not for that day. And the same thing was going to be true when it came to the orev and so on and so forth. So the Maral says that a day which is plagued, he couldn't turn around. If the plague was on them that day, then he would say, okay, tomorrow we can start afresh. It's almost like the halachic concept of a tful yoim. You know, what's the halachic concept of a tful yoim? If a person is tameh, is a person is ritually impure, and they go to the mikveh, so going to the mikveh really takes off the tumah, really takes off their impurity. But they still have some level of impurity. They still can't go into the Beis HaMikdash that day. Why? Because they were tameh that day. And if they were tameh that day, so then they have to sort of like see it through.
What about the other makos?
So the Maral says this about all makos, where there was a bringing of the Makkah, where the plague has to, you have to do something which is an active undoing of the Makkah. So by the Tzfardea, you had to actively undo the Makkah. By the Orav, you had to actively undo the Makkah. He says, by the case of Borod, it doesn't say that. Borod is clearly an exception. Moshe Rabbeinu just said, I'll go out of the city, I'll raise up my hands to Hashem, and it'll stop. He says, why? Because by Bora, they didn't have to do a undoing of the Makkah, they just had to stop the Makkah. It's one thing to stop the Makkah, it's another thing to, you know, to undo it, to kill the frogs, to take away the animals, right? That is a push in the other direction. And so to speak, you know, it's like the transmission would go out, you know, to go from a day where you're bringing the Makkah to a day where you're removing the Makkah, you know, you can't do. Go from there, we're doing the Makkah, and to just stop, that's okay. So a Makkah, which all it was required was to stop, then it could stop on that same day, but otherwise it required a definitely that it had to be on another day. Okay. Vayar Parai. You see what he's doing. You get the sense of what he's doing here in this parak. And these are like, again, these are parparois. These are little bits and pieces of analysis of features of the makos that we find by this one as opposed to that one, and trying to isolate and see what's at play here. So here by the Tzvardeya, by the Tzvardeya, we have when Moshe Rabbeinu davened that the Tzvardeya should stop. So what happens? So Paro, so to speak, fools him. Vayar Paray ki hoiso haravacha. Paray saw that they had breathing space. Vahachbed es liboy, and he hardened his heart. Leishama aleim, and he didn't listen to them. Kashir, Biber Hashem, exactly as Hashem predicted was going to happen. So the issue is, says the Maral, that in this case, it says this. Paro saw that there was breathing space. It doesn't say it by the Mak of Orev, right, where they went through a similar charade, that Paro said, okay, I give in, go bring Korbanos, and so on and so forth, and it says, I'll let you go, and Moshe Rabbeinu goes out to Davin, and the Orav gets run, and then it just says, Vayachbed Paro es libo gamba pamazois, Paro hardened his heart. It doesn't say Paro saw that there was Ravacha, and he hardened his heart. It just says, you know, he hardened his heart, that he backed down from his backing down. He went ahead with holding them in. By Arbe, as well, where there was also this sort of a thing where Paro said, okay, just, you know, daven that you'll get rid of them, and Moshe Rabbeinu went and davened and they got rid of them, and the pasuk says, Hashem hardened the heart of Paro. It doesn't say anything about what he observed. However, again, the only other place where it says it is Vayar Paro ki chodol amotev aboed vakoiles vayesev lachatoi. Paro saw that the rain and the thunder and everything had stopped, and he continued to sin, and he hardened his heart. So the Maral is struggling. Again, you study these parshiyos, you have to make a big chart, a big matrix, you know. This is what it says by this Makkah, this is what it says by this Makkah, this is what it says by this Makkah, you know, and about the warning, and about the name of Hashem, and about the hardening, and about the response. And why did this happen in these situations and not happen in those situations? It's extremely complex. I always feel like many, you know, Mefarshim will touch this one, will touch that one, but you have to sort through the whole thing. And I was doing a little bit of that here. So why is it that by many Makos there were negotiations? But by some of the Makos it says that after Moshe Rabbeinu did his thing, Paro just hardened his heart. And by these two Makos it says, and Paro saw that things were better and he hardened his heart. Why does it have that phrase? So the Maral explains as follows, that some plagues were just painful, and other plagues, a central part of the plague was that it wasn't just painful, but it was scary. It was frightening. And when it says, Vayar Paro ki hoisa harvacha, it was because it wasn't the issue of the pain dissipating, it was the fear dissipating. When it came to Tzvardeya and Borod, submits the Maral, more than the pain was the fear. The Tzvardeya was hugely noisy, right? You can imagine the cacophony of noise of all these frogs every place going ribbit, right? All at the same time. And it's not just that you can imagine it, but Chazal say, it's a medrash which the Maral quotes over here to support this idea, that it says he went to daven al dvar hatzvardim. Now this is a consistent pattern in Chazal. Al dvar hatzvardim, the little translation of that is on the matter of the tzvardim. That's the way you would translate that phrase, pshutai. He davened for Hashem on the matter of the tzvardim. But Chazal always darshan when it says dvar, because dvar has a dual meaning. Dvar means the matter, and it means the word. It means the word. You know, and in many forum it says, because the dvar is defined by the dibur, right? The word that describes it is supposed to be the essence of the thing. But Chazal always darshan that there's some kind of an oral component here. So the Medrash says, Maral quotes, Shahayakoylan shel tzvardim kosha lehem imakosan. The noise, the dvar hatzvardim, wasn't words, right? But the noise, the animal equivalent of words of the tzvardim, was more difficult than the slimy frogs all over the place. It was driving them nuts and was scaring them. So says the Maral, that's the idea of Yira. When it's just noise, noise doesn't do anything, but it frightens, right? He's nivas, right? You're scared from the voice. When you speak about the borad, so the pasuk, the rav miyais kailais Elohim, right? The pasuk says about the maka of borad, right? He said, daven to Hashem, and he doesn't say, and get rid of the borad. The borad is a second request. His first request is, get rid of those kolos Elohim, of those voice, that those God, I mean, we would say probably those God-awful sounds, right? The thunder and everything which was going on, get rid of that and the borad. So again, what do you see? What was more of an issue in Paro's mind? Was the frightening sounds. Says the Maral, when it's Yira, so then it's not just, okay, you know, Paro was in pain, and he hardened his heart to, you know, to withstand the pain, or whatever it was. There was fear, and the fear caused him to respond. And when he had Revocha, the fear subsided, so then that changed. That's why this description is found in these two particular spots. That's what the Maral explains.
He's Earl Fitzchapler.
Well, yeah, it's a very interesting thing. I have troubled by the same thing. When it comes to the Orav, you would imagine wild animals roving the streets. So that was pretty frightening too. So what you have over here, however, is that the coil factor for the year, and it was by Orev and by the Tzvardeya and by the Borod, the fear was the noise. There's some kind of special fear. I can't imagine that they weren't afraid of the Orev, and I can't imagine they weren't afraid of all kinds of other things that they had here in the Makkah. But there's a special fear of noise. You know, in the Gemara it speaks about a halachic case, hamavis es chaveray, a person who scares his friend, and it causes him damage. He has a reaction of shock. How does he scare his friend? Like you scared your friends. Like I scared my friends. Boom! A sudden loud noise. There's something about koilos that are extra scary. That's all. That's the best I can do. Okay. Next little piece. Again, pieces. This is a perek of pieces. Here the Maral deals with a problem which is an obvious problem and difficulty. Actually hot in here. And that is the in advance of the Makkah of Borod, of the plague of hail, So Moshe Rabbeinu is told to go to Paro and to say to him as follows. So said Hashem, God of the Hebrews, send my people that they should serve me, keep apam azois, because this time I'm going to send all of my plagues to your heart, uvavadecho, uvamecha, against your servants, against your nation, so that you will know ki ein kamayni b'cholor, that there's nobody like me in the land. Ki atoshalachti esyori v'achayischo v'esamecha badover, I could have sent my hand against you already and smitten you and all of your nation with the plague. Vatikochei min aretz, and you would have been destroyed from the land. Paro had already seen two makos earlier, was the mako of Dever, the plague, the terrible plague that killed so many of the animals of the Mitzrim. Hashem said, you think I couldn't have killed you the same way? I could have done it right then. But, bavur zayis hamariticha, I've kept you alive because I want to show you my strength, ulman saper shemi b'chol aretz. I want you to tell of my wonders, of my name throughout the land. And he says, if you still hold on to my people, I'm going to bring tomorrow hail upon you. So the question is, why does Hashem say, I'm sending all of my magefais to you at this point in time? So Rashi says, Lamadnu mikan, we learn from here, Shemakas b'chayres shekulo keneged kol ha-makos. Makas b'chayres is equal to all the other makos. What's the problem? The problem is this isn't Makas Bechoros. This is Makas Borot. So what does he mean that Makas Bechoros, oh, we see from here that Makas Bechoros is equal to all the other Makas? So there are a lot of interesting commentaries on this Rashi. I mean, remember, there's a problem in the Pasuk and there's a problem in the Rashi. The problem in the Pasuk is, why is he saying before the Makas Borot, I'm sending to you all of my plagues? Why is this all my plagues? So Rashi answers the question. He says, because there's a makkah that's equal to all of the plagues. And what's the makkah that's equal to all of the plagues? Makas Bechoros. Okay, so that solves the problem. But it doesn't solve the problem. There's a problem with the Rashi because we're not at Makas Bechoros. So what are you talking about? So there are those who explain Rashi with a change that they say there's a little bit of a mistake in the text. And what is the mistake in the text? The mistake in the text is that it should be Makas Bikurim or Makas Batsaires, right? The Maral brings in the Gur Aryeh, which he even references here in his commentary on the Rashi. So he says that Makas Bechoros refers, maybe you don't even have to change the text, it's referring to Bikurim, and they say it nicely. Right? Some say Makas Batsaires, I think, some say, but it's a plague on the crops. It's referring to Makas Borod. Bechoros, right? Why would we call the crops Bechoros? So the thing is, because what it says at the end of the Parsha is that the only things which were really destroyed in Makas Borod were the earliest crops. Yasaira Aviv, right? It only destroyed the earliest crops, and the idea was that the earliest crops were already developed and were strong, and when something's already developed and strong and it gets hit by a hailstorm, it gets splintered, it gets smashed to smithereens. But when something is just fledgling and soft, it gets hit by a hailstorm, so it bends, and it's rach kekana, and it's resilient, it bounces back. So this was Makas Bechoros, right? So it works, except it's pretty dangerous to commandeer the term Makas Bechoros, which everybody has a first association what it means, to say that over here it's referring to the crops. So the Maral understands that, of course, this is a warning about Makas Bechoros. It's a warning about Makas Bechoros. And the question is, why is he warning about Makas Bechoros here? So the Maral and the Gur Aryeh works a little bit with the language, But the Maral of, and he then he alludes to something, but which becomes the main thing which he says over here in the Gurais Hashem. The Maral in the Guraya says, he says here, Bapam Hazais. Bapam Hazais means now. So the Maral says, no, Bapam Hazais doesn't mean now. It doesn't mean that he's doing it now, because by all the Makos, it just says, Hinani, I'm going to do this. Bapam, and that's what it's going to say later when he's about to actually bring the Makkah. Bapam Hazais means that, you know, if you don't listen to what I'm trying to say to send away the Jewish people, I will be able to bring this upon you, and I'm going to bring upon you an ultimate plague which will cause you to let the Jewish people go. So he's referencing Makas Bechoros down the line, and he discusses a little bit the idea that he was trying to make Paro know, as he says here, you know, I could kill you all right now if I want, but I'm not. You see what I've done already to the animals. I could do it right now if I want, but I'm not doing it. I can send against you all of my magefais in order to be able to destroy you, though. The Maral himself, however, here adds a very, very nice thing. And he says, because again, you still remain somewhat with a fundamental problem, which is, why now does he warn him about Makas Bechoros? Now, we've had one other time where HaKadosh Baruch Hu warned him about Makas Bechoros, and that was before he started any of the Makos. When Moshe Rabbeinu was sent down to Mitzrayim, in Parsha Shmos, he said, Hashem said, go tell him, my son, my firstborn is the Jewish people. If you don't let the Jewish people go, I'm going to kill your firstborn. Makas Bechoros is the consummate Makkah. It's the climactic Makkah. It's, yes, in that sense, equal to all of the other Makos, because it is the one which brings deliverance to the Jewish people. And Moshe Rabbeinu lets them know at the outset what the end game is. Right? As Rashi says, it's unusual, because usually a person will try to hide their weapons, hide their plans, but over here he goes and right away shows what the end is going to be. However, on the other side of the fence, the Maral says as follows. Rav Yehuda hayanaisein bohem simonim. Rav Yehuda, as we know in the Haggadah Shel Pesach, took the Makos, and he gave a shorthand for the Makos. He made Dan Tzardei Akinim into Detzach. He made Orev Dever Shchin into Adash, and he made the other ones into Biachav. Big kunz. And what was the big trick of Rav Yehuda? So all the commentaries show that Detzach Adash Biachav is not just a cute way to be able to shorten it, to make an acronym, which, by the way, of course, he could have made an acronym called the Tzachba, or the Tzachbad, and Shechabdo, whatever it is. You know, he divided it into three sections, because the Makos, in fact, went through three sub-series. Within the entire series of the 10 Makos, there was three subsets, the Tzach, Adash, and the Achav. And the Maral is going to speak about this much more later, when we speak about more about it later in the Makos. Maral speaks about it a little bit here in the Gur Aryeh, because, you know, he's not following a Seder HaGodah. But let's just for a moment take it as a given, that there's a series called Tzach, there's a series called Adash, and this is a series called Biachav. And if that's the case, what's happening here at this point in time is the beginning of the series Biachav. And the beginning of the series Biachav is the beginning of the series that will culminate in Makas Bechoros. So therefore, at the onset of the series, he says, okay, now we're starting phase 3 of the operation. And phase 3 of the operation is Kol Magefaisai. I'm going to be throwing the book at you. Not all at once. Okay, we're going to be doing it one step at a time. And I could do it all at once if you want, but I want to be able to hold on.